So as we lean into what's going to be the last in our series on the Stay Positive, I just want to try to unpack just this idea that we live in abundance. I mean, we know that America has always been represented as a land of plenty. And as I've shared before about my travels when I was in Kenya with Compassion International, every young person I met there was all about wondering what it's like to live here, and more particularly what it's like to come and be part of the American experiment. And we know right now it's being tested in so many ways with the virus and just with all the social upheaval. But as we were reminded in Scripture, and we're going to look at a story this morning, that God has always been in the middle of providing. And I can say in the life of our church that we've seen it in so many incredible ways, the amazing amount of generosity that you continue to invest in the kingdom. And even though we're not together in the house of worship here, we are together in the kingdom and the way that we've seen God show up. And yet, when you think about just what 2020 has been all about thus far, right? Paradox of 2020. There's too much hate on the one hand, and seems like there's not enough love, and there's too many needs, and there's not enough supply. I mean, think toilet paper, right? There's too much fear, and there's not enough peace, and there's too many bills, and there's not enough jobs. And yet, it's been amazing, as I said, as we begin this conversation, that the gospel, and it doesn't take much to sort of just go out there and just Google, how is the church doing? Just the amazing things that are taking place in the name of Jesus Christ and of the kingdom. That the message of the gospel, the hope that we have, is actually flourishing. I know even in the context of our church, many of you are serving and looking for other ways to serve our neighbors. And I just want to applaud that and say thank you for that. People are selfishly giving to meet others' needs, and that's so amazing. And that literally churches are making history around the world together, all doing good work. And so at the same time, it seems like there's a tension about whether we're going to run out or if there's more than enough. And I think in our conversations over the many months together here at Linden Road, we've tried to operate from a perspective that, and we've seen God demonstrate in so many amazing ways of his provision. And part of it, though, is grounded in this idea, it's our culture of consumption, right? And we know that because all you have to do is watch tomorrow for the UPS driver or your postal person and just see what they're dropping off, because much of our life has moved to them being the conduit by which we get our supplies and our necessary connection pieces. And so it just seems as though that we've really overwhelmed those kinds of individuals. And so we need to ask maybe for their forgiveness. And on this hot summer's weeks ahead, I'd encourage you to put out a cold bottle of water for your mailman or for the UPS driver just to bless them. But it's interesting, I want to drill down on this idea of just this culture of consumption by looking at a Bible story. Because the truth is, overall, the Bible mentions the topic of money and possession over 2,000 times. Because we know this much, that God knows that money and things are the number one competition for our hearts, for him. And yet, the root of the tension in our journey together of being Christ followers is it's a culture of consumption. And it's really a tension between this culture of consumption and God's economy. That out of that, there's this mindset that we can develop. And sometimes we actually start with this idea of scarcity that we don't have. And I want to remind us that the idea of scarcity really comes not from our wallets, but actually comes from our minds, if you will. It's how we view things. And so we start out with this mindset that there's just not enough. The prophet Haggai says this, you eat, but you do not have enough. You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe yourselves, but no one is warm. And he who earns wages to put into a bag with holes. And so we know that there's this sort of mindset, that, and we see it as we invest in our lives each day with our time and our talent and our treasures. But I want to show that scarcity is actually, and I've shown this before, this model is actually, it's a cycle. And so it starts out first, God supplies, and then out of that, his provision, if you will, we consume, And then when we consume, then all of a sudden we start to lack. And then when we lack, we fear. And then when we fear, we consume more. And then we get into this cycle, if you will, that just leaves us very confused. I mean, think about this, right? The great toilet paper run of 2020. I mean, who would have thought? And I'm still not quite sure why. And it'll be interesting when students look back on this as they study our history, say 20 years from now. I'm not sure that what COVID had to do with toilet paper, because it's not really that kind of a problem, is it? And yet it was our fear that we might be left without our comfortableness. And yet at the same time, there's this other side of this conversation, this idea of being abundance, is thinking through abundance or having an abundance mindset, that we start with the perspective that there's more than enough. And we know this verse from Ephesians, right? Now to him who's able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us. You see, we know this to be true. Everything about God is excessive. It's extravagant, and it's always more than enough. All the stories that we hear of how God provides is just beyond measure in terms of really seeing that. And I know there's so many stories from our own church and even the good work that we've done, that you've done, even long before I got here, with our Pots and Pans ministries and our Feeding of the 5,000 program and some other things in which we've loved on the community in so many amazing ways. Or later this month, we hope we're going to be able to serve at St. Luke's and provide people there with a meal. This is a way to offer a cold cup of water in a moment of encouragement. So I want to say it this way. If you view life through the lens of scarcity that you don't have, you're going to always be fearful and anxious. But I want us to be reminded that Jesus has a much different plan for us. You've heard me use this verse before, and we just talked about this a couple weeks ago, John 10:10. I mean, look at this. The thief comes only to steal, scarcity, and kill, scarcity, and destroy, scarcity. He wants to take all these things from us. And if you think about just where we've been over the last few months in so many different ways, it seems like that's so true. And it puts us on edge. And yet, we got to be reminded that Jesus says, I came that they may have life. And not just life, but he says, and to have it abundantly. Look at your neighbor and say, abundantly. That means a lot. That means overflowing. And so as we lean into this conversation here today, looking at a story from the Old Testament, I just want to try to say, okay, how do we create a vaccine, if you will, to push against that kind of idea, thinking we don't have enough? How do we inoculate ourselves so that we can see this and with clarity? And so in 2 Kings chapter 4, there's a story between the prophet Elijah and a certain woman. And let me read it to you here. A certain woman, the widow of one of the guild prophets, cried out to Elisha, "My husband, your servant, is dead. You know that he served the Lord, revered the Lord, yet now his creditor has come to take my two children into servitude." Elisha answered her, "What am I to do for you? Tell me what you have in the house." She replied, "This servant of yours has nothing in the house but a jug of oil." Now, let me set this up to give you some context. The current king of Israel led the nation to turn away from God and to worship false idols. And the widow of one of the few in Israel that loved God and honored the Lord, this woman's husband, was a prophet, and he had died. And he left her with a deep amount of debt. And the creditors are knocking at the door, and they're coming to take stuff. Now, what's interesting is the Mosaic law allowed you to enslave others to settle the debt. So her sons were about to become slaves, and so this woman is desperate. Now, I want to just lay this out. Three ideas. First of all, how God works, his idea of provision. First of all, don't diminish what you have. You know, she says, "I just have a jug." Just. Now, and the prophet's going to show her here in a minute, she had more than she could possibly be reminded. So sometimes when we think of scarcity, we think it's fixed. We fix on what we lack. But when we think about abundance and having something, it's asked, well, what do you have? So, I mean, think about this. The farmer would never harvest a crop if he always diminished the tiny insignificance of the seed. But yet we know the abundance of the seed is what it is. And it will be amazing, the produce that the seed creates when it's planted in the ground. And so as we think about these things in our own journey as a church, it's important that we see that God's already provided us with everything we need to do ministry in the community. He's given us the people and the talents and even the resources to make it happen. Now, that being said, the second point I want us to see is that we don't want to underestimate what we have, first of all. Don't diminish what we have. Second of all, God often does the extravagant through what seems insignificant. Because, see, it's in those moments we really have to depend upon God showing up. So to continue in the story here, he said, go out and borrow vessels from all your neighbors, as many empty vessels as you can, and then come back and close the door on yourself and your children. Pour the oil into all the vessels, and as each is filled, set it aside. So she went out, she closed the door on herself and her children, and as they handed her the vessels, she would pour oil. Now, you can see here, and it's important as we drill down, that this is even the idea of why, within the context of the church, we talk about tithing. And it's important that we see this, because this is the reason why your faithfulness is such a big part of the church being the church in the community and the world. The prophet Malachi says in chapter 3, verse 10, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in my house. And hear this. God then says, test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it. Now, what's interesting here when we talk about the tithe is it's this idea, you know, why is it that God talks about a percentage? The tithe is usually 10%. And why doesn't he just say a flat amount? And the reason that he uses a percentage is because we all are vested in this together so that everyone could experience the miracle of God's provision. Because, and I've seen this in the life of this church, even our children, our young adults almost now, are incredibly generous. That on Sundays when we were meeting in the offering plates, once a month for sure, if not more often, there were always envelopes there from our children who were offering their tithe to God, because you see, even they can give 10% of their allowance. So just a side note here to think about it, that what you think is nothing is often what God can use as a something. Your nothing is often God's something. And then the third part here is this really, that God's abundance often follows our faith. And that really the question is, do you trust me? And if you think about us as a church, and those of you that have been around for a while know that the journey we've been on, especially in the last couple of years, that we really see that God's abundance keeps showing up in amazing ways. And so again, the writer of 2 Kings goes on to say, and when all the vessels were filled, she said to her son, bring me another vessel. And he answered, there's none left. And then the oil stopped. And she went and told the man of God, who said, go sell the oil to pay off your creditor, and what remains you and your children can live with. See, we tend to get this thing all backwards, the order of it. We say to God, I need more. Great, and then we pour, if you will. But you see, when we look at the parable of the talents, it isn't that we aren't trusted with more until we've been faithful with the little. I mean, I think it's really interesting that for many of us, you know, that the idea of trusting God is so hard. But I can tell you this much, what I've seen in the life of this church, what I've seen in my own personal journey, and you all have shared some of these stories with me, is that every time that you've gotten spiritually stuck, most of the time it was because you stopped pouring and you started storing, started worrying and becoming anxious. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't plan and think about the future in certain ways, but it does mean that we have to have a different mindset. And that sometimes, and I think this is part of the reason, if I can, why maybe COVID has come into our lives, is the way it has leveled everything. And even now, the uncertainty of what that means tomorrow, even in terms of our community experiences. It's really depends upon how we view God, and that we find that sometimes when our happiness comes from the things of the world, that's not really what Jesus wants, that he wants us to worship him and find our place and purpose in him. And so part of the way that, and you've heard me suggest this before too, as we've talked about this, it's sometimes when you're spiritually stuck, the way you can get yourself out of that is to actually give your way out of it. To give of your time and your talent and your resources into others and into things that are outside of yourself. I mean, it's just amazing how God's generosity, even maybe this is a way of saying it, I've got the faith to pour because I belong to the God of more. How does that work? I mean, I think it's really interesting when you think about our friends in California, Adam McLean. And I had a chance to have a conversation with Adam recently, and here Adam is stepping out in a whole new way, And it's been amazing how the generosity of God's people, and it's been in small gifts that have actually leveraged, I think now it's almost $40,000 that he's generated just by getting on his Facebook and using his influence, which I'll remind you of a conversation with Chase on another issue, our friend from Grand Rapids, this idea that we need to use our influence to impact the world. And so it's interesting how Adam, and so check out this.
Sure.
And now it's like all of a sudden, it's like, this is crazy. But how cool is that? And as a way of just leaning into that, you know, and I don't know where you want to go with that, but I just think, you know, the generosity that you've generated internationally for 1,900 families, Adam, that is like...
It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, it makes, in a lot of ways, it makes absolutely no sense. I mean, I'm not a professional fundraiser. And I have a Facebook account, and we've raised like, I don't know, close to $35,000, mostly through Facebook and just connections and people sharing and wanting to help. Yeah, but it's super crazy to think about all of those funds coming, for the most part, are people that I've never met. And so, yeah, it's cool to sit down with the pastors and try to explain each week, like, hey, just so you know, the money this week came from a variety of people, or in some weeks it's been mostly from one person, and this is how I kind of know that person, or so on and so forth. So it's just been, it's been interesting. It's been, you know, for the pastors themselves, they just feel like every week is a miracle. You know, here's this person that they kind of, before the pandemic, they all knew me. You know, I was around a couple weeks a year, and I brought teams to their church and things like that, and we were friends, Facebook friends. But now I've been sitting at their living, or, you know, their dining room table for the last 8 or 9 weeks, hanging out with them, getting to know them really well, and then, yeah, basically delivering the funds that they're asking for, which is it's been insane. There's no other way to describe it. It doesn't make sense. It's nonsensical in that sense. So. That's often how acts of faith are.
Yeah. And I guess that's the part that, just thinking about, you know, okay, so what does this look like going forward? I mean, the parable of talents, right? We aren't trusted with more until we've been faithful with a little.
Yeah.
And so I think in your own season, it's like, I'm not sure that when you started doing this on Fridays, I mean, on Thursdays and Fridays, it got on your Facebook account and said, hey, I need your help, that this would end up being like, I'm going to find a whole new vocation, sort of, but not really.
Yeah. I mean, so there's just been this crazy confluence of a lot of different factors, which is so often the case in life. And it's no different in, you know, for ministry people than it is for people in a regular job.
You know, right.
I think at some level, people look at ministry jobs and like think that it's somewhat like magical how it all works. And,
oh, right.
That's it's very much a regular job in right. many capacities. And so, yeah, it's been interesting to see, just as things unfolded with what happened to PPM. I mean, they're, if you think about their Praying Pelican Missions, is a short-term missions agency primarily. And so they're doing spring break and summer mission trips are kind of where their income for the entire year comes from. And then just like a lot of seasonal, you know, if you're Cedar Point, you live off the summer, right? Yeah. And so that's no different for Praying Pelican. And so when this hit in mid-March, it couldn't have hit at a worse time because they actively had groups out on the mission field. And there were hundreds of people that were currently serving all around Latin America and in the United States that had to be pulled back. But then also you had all these trips that were pending to come in the summer with payments were due, meaning, you know, they had reservations and PPM had largely spent most of the money on staff and payroll and
right.
expenses. But then all of a sudden, all of those churches, those trips weren't going to happen. And so they stopped fundraising on their own because it was impossible to fundraise. You couldn't do a pancake breakfast and things like that,
right.
or a car wash or whatever. And so, yeah, you had PPM looking at down the pike, I guess, and saying like, oh, you know, like, what are we going to do? There's no revenue coming. Do we lay everyone off? Do we furlough everyone? What do we do? And so, just yeah, I was able to step in and kind of lead the charge on what became known as the Payroll Protection Program, and activating not just PPM, but also literally tens of thousands of churches to call their members of Congress and their senators and so on and so forth to say, hey, you know, these nonprofits, these religious nonprofits, really, they can survive this, but they're going to need the same protections that, you know, the federal government is offering to small businesses. And so, yeah, I mean, that was kind of the first miracle of this whole thing, was like getting the federal government to somehow come up with a way where they could help churches not lay off staffs or religious nonprofits like PPM.
Sure.
I mean, it's just kind of crazy to see where it started from there, of just like helping PPM see that there were other options than just letting go of, I mean, amazing. You have the right staff. It's just, can we make it through this period?
Right.
And so seeing them take a step of faith, and then me stick, you know, been this confluence of awesomeness, to be honest.
Right. So how do you get, I mean, and this could be just where we spend the rest of our time, is this idea, how do you get have a faith that continues to pour, if you will, because you believe, because of just how you view God? I mean, you've seen it laid out as you drive in your car to visit these pastors and you become the hands and feet of Jesus. And you really do underestimate your abilities. I mean, look, fundraising is just asking. It's just, if you don't ask, you don't get, right? And you have to have a compelling vision. And when Adam stands in the backyard, you know, and says, I need help, it's like, okay, I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try. And you know, wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly, it is an act of faith. And so like today's Thursday. And so our staff is calling around to all of our pastors and checking in on them and asking them what their needs might be for the next week. And of which I have $0. Actually, as of this moment, I have -$ in my account, because we, as is typical, I tend to be a little over generous. You know, that's just kind of how it goes. But yeah, so then tomorrow, I have no idea what that number is. Let's say it's another $3,500, of which I have zero idea where it's going to come from. And then, but where your question of like, where's the oil coming from and where's the oil going? It makes no sense. I mean, Tom, it doesn't make any sense. So some weeks it's been literally people, neighbors walking by, a lady, an elderly woman from that lives like four doors down from me, who I guess follows me on Facebook. She walked over with a check to Praying Penguin Ministries and donated something. Yeah, and I was like, we'll take it. Sure. Yeah. Or, you know, clients of my wife does dog sitting, say, like last week, a woman said, hey, it's my birthday. I don't want to give a birthday gift to myself. Instead, I'm going to give a birthday gift to 9 families. And she sponsored 9 families for her, for her own birthday gift, going out and spending money. And these are all non-Christian people who just feel compelled by something is happening, you know, and that's what I keep describing to the pastors of Mexico, is God is blessing, yes, the people in Ensenada that are receiving the food, but God is really doing something here in amongst people who aren't Christians, who are just taking steps of faith of their own. And they don't even know, maybe that's not God to them. Maybe that's something else, or maybe they just, whatever. Right. It's interesting to see how God's drawing himself to others in the ways that only he can do through this. And so, like I tell everybody, I'm just the witness. Like I'm literally not doing anything. I'm standing in my backyard, posting a video and delivering money. I mean, there's nothing miraculous in it.
Right. Well, right. But I think it's that faithfulness. So again, it's, you know, leaning into, so like even in this little church here, we've had some real struggles over the last year in particular, and COVID didn't exactly help that. But on the other hand, our level of generosity has been at such an unprecedented level, because I think there's these other things. So like the first week we talked, I think it was 7 or 8 weeks ago. I mean, I don't know what we've done, what I would love us to be able to do, but I've had people say, no, we're going to be there and we're going to be supportive. And, you know, and it's like, oh my goodness. And when I think of this, so I'm looking at 2 Corinthians 9 verse 8, Paul says, and God is able to bless you abundantly, so that all things at all times, having all that you need, will abound in every good work. Mm-hmm. you know, and that's just your faithfulness and the idea of getting on and doing it. I mean, that's what a beauty that is. So thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a humbling place. I think I would describe, if I think of that thing with the description of the oil, right? I would see myself as the vessel of the oil, not as the oil itself, right? The Holy Spirit's doing the work. I'm literally just holding the vessel and that's it. And so, yeah, but at the same time, as you made mention too, like, this has led to new opportunities for me professionally and
right.
family and things like that. It's hard to, particularly as an American who, you know, we love self-reliance and we love the idea that, hey, I earned everything. But to see God pour out his abundance on us and our family too, in little ways, like the PPP loan, meeting my financial needs during this time right. when our business, you know, is suffering by 75% or something like that. And then to have the opportunity now to have a new job coming out of this is an expression of God's abundance. You know, and I feel weird about that.
Sure. You know? And that's good. That's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Because that's humbling. Paul goes on to say another verse later, verse 11, he says, you will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. And I just think, you know, just what your family's going to watch you do as you lead into this and what the pastors in Mexico that you're going to go visit here in another day or so are going to do and your neighbors. I mean, yeah, wow. And I guess I just, when I grow up, I want to be like you because that's the kind of impact we want our lives to have.
Yeah. I mean, I guess think of it like this, like at the end of the day, I'm not a pastor. I'm not, you know, I'm not anybody particularly, I'm a small business owner, right? I mean, that's right. my role in life. That's what everybody in my neighborhood knows Adam as. This is the guy that owns the small business. He's got a family. He participates in the neighborhood and so on and so forth. But every single person in our community has now seen there's like 4,000 houses or 12,000 people or something like that in my little neighborhood. They all know who I am because of this, right. of, you know, before, because of what we did in TJ with the migrants and so on and so forth. That's God testifying to them. You know what I mean? Like we're just loving our neighbors. They know I'm not perfect. They know that, you know, I'm not like some saint or anything like that, but they.
Okay. But once again, you're the vessel. And because of your faithfulness, even in the imperfection, because I'm sure when the dogs are barking that they shouldn't at hours of the night or whatever, you know, or you didn't bring the garbage in when you were supposed to and it's sitting out and neighbors don't like it, whatever it is, you know, it's like, okay, I guess we'll give them some grace. So, well,
are
thank you.
That not all my neighbors like me. Is that what, do you know something I don't know?
No. I'm just saying there's those moments that we're all broken. And the beauty of being in community is even in our brokenness, we can push through it and show grace to each other. And our connection at a deeper level is obviously the kingdom, but sometimes it starts with that obscure Jesus sort of reaches into in Leviticus, in the middle of the book of Leviticus, and says, just love your neighbor. And if you love your neighbor, the rest of these things, yeah, the rest of these things will take on a life of their own.
Yeah. And so, I mean, in my community, if I think about life on my block or I think about people in your church and think about their life on where they live, for me, it starts here on my block with just doing what I'm passionate about. So as COVID started, you can't give a gardener like weeks off. And so I right. started just like, you know, I know your wife is super into gardening. I just started seeds because it was that time of year. And I just like, well, I need 20, but let's try 200. And then I started just giving them away or selling them off my driveway and so on and so forth. And people, my office is now in my garage, as you can see in the background. And so the door would be open and people all day long, you know, I couldn't touch them or see them or really even talk to them because people were maintaining such far distances. But people, you know, moms would push their strollers by my house and stop at the little farm table, which is weird for the middle of the city, but you know, most of us are Midwesterners at heart. And I grew up with, you know, buying peaches off of somebody's driveway or whatever. and so for them to see them stop and buy plants that they could take home and so on and so forth, was just what I could do. It was a simple expression of my love for my community, knowing that everyone was stuck at home and everybody kind of wanted to garden but didn't know where to start. But so it's little things, I guess, is my encouragement to folks is, maybe for you, it's not gardening. Maybe for you, it's, you know, baking bread and taking it to a neighbor, or it's, just checking on them. You know, that's been those kinds of things. Those are simple expressions that any single person can do on their block where they live. If they're in an apartment, you know, get to know your neighbor's names and stuff like that. And that's just where it starts.
Yep. That's a good place. I mean, that's a good place. So thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. This is fun.
Yeah. So just really appreciate you and the family and just the model that you are. And we'll see what happens next. I mean,
I'm excited.
Yeah. Cool, well, that's good. I mean,
so I don't know about you, but I'm incredibly encouraged by what Adam is doing. And I'm watching him as a way to encourage my own faith journey in understanding what God might do through us here in this community. There's lots of uncertainty, but I'm not going to have a mindset of scarcity. I'm going to have a mindset that God's providing, and it's our responsibility together as the church to figure out how to leverage it to make an impact for the kingdom, to grow the presence of the kingdom in our community in ways that we haven't even thought about. And I would suggest that the opportunities in front of us right now are that, because the idea of we're again reaffirming just this idea that the church is not the building. Even though we want to be here and we want to worship together, we're finding that there's things taking place in our lives together, and the things that need to happen in our community are happening outside of our building, and it's a beautiful thing. Now, even though we've been in the middle of tough times, and I want to just talk about this amazing platform even this morning that we're using from our friends at Life Church. What's been crazy about that is because of this platform, over 325,000 people have made a profession of faith because of watching some 31, 32,000 churches now that are utilizing this method of communicating the gospel. Does it make up for being in the building? No, in some sense, but it just shows you that God can use anything to grow the kingdom. And so it's that idea that we have to hang on to, and to realize the hope of the gospel that comes and our being faithful and even being stretched to try things in a new way. You see, the goal of our lives isn't to be filled or to achieve or collect. I mean, when we think about the ultimate sacrifice that Jesus made on our behalf, and you know, the cross is here behind me to remind us of that, that what he did for us, you know, that really is an incredible gift to give us life. You know, the song Amazing Grace, to remind us that we didn't deserve this, and yet he came in to our world, took on flesh, moved into the neighborhood, and then walked with us as human beings, experienced our pain, experienced our brokenness, brought healing, and then did the ultimate healing by allowing his life to be given as a sacrifice on the cross to atone for our sins. So there's really no reasonable response for us other than to be willing to pour out our life for him, that really it's about holding nothing back and that we ought to be emptied out. And so in the days ahead, the question is, do we trust him? Even tomorrow, do we trust him? And that's the tension, because we want to make our plans and yet to be reminded we only get the moment we're in. So I'm grateful for this faith-filled journey that we're on, grateful that we're here to share it and together. At the same time, there's lots of uncertainty, but I'm excited by what God will do in and through and even in spite of us. So let's pray.